Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and I am joined once again by my good friend, cohort, and colleague, Mr. Brian E. Roach. Brian, what's going on?
I'm just thrilled to know that the Ravens are cooked and done because of Lamar Jackson being on the cover of Madden. Therefore, nothing else matters.
Well, we had a couple quick hitters to start. You got one of them. We'll see. I don't know. There's some people that try and say so-and-so, like Brady beat it or Patrick Mahomes beat it. I mean, it's like Final Destination. You're the movies. You know what I mean? You don't totally avoid it. It comes back to get you. Just ask Gronk. So
Just ask Antonio Brown.
Oh, geez. Yeah. There's another one. I don't know if that's a Madden curse or actual witchcraft curse. Maybe both. Yeah, no kidding. But there was a couple other things. One is they just announced that the Pro Bowl for 2021 will be in Las Vegas, assuming, I guess, one's going to be played. Yeah, okay, and that's about all we need to know about that.
There you go. It's going to be played. It's going to be in Vegas. So what?
You know, and I know, yeah, we used to talk about this. Like, it's unfortunate that, you know, there's just not enough interest in the game because the game isn't actually quite much of a game at all. And you see other sports always trying to tweak the formula too. Major League Baseball trying to make it worth something, or the NBA where they don't even play defense in those games. They try and do something to spice them up. And they've done everything from captains and picking teams to make fantasy football real to, hey, let's move it around. And it was in Orlando and it was in Hawaii. And I mean, I think it's a good reward for the players to go somewhere that's at least interesting, if you're, you know, because they usually bring their families with them. So it's nice, you know, they go to, I guess Vegas would be, I don't know how family friend, I guess Vegas is, Vegas isn't quite just the smoke filled rooms and debauchery that it used to be, you know, that we think right. of from, you know, the heyday, like the mafia movies and stuff like that. So I guess it's okay, but I don't know. Like, I wish they would pick some places. There's beautiful places all over, like go to San Antonio or somewhere that the NFL doesn't normally, you know, frequent, or I don't know, put one of these games in London. That'll really get some people perked up. But hey, they'll get fans in the stands too, because people there will actually care to either go to the destination, you know what I mean, make it a mini vacation, and or you know, you'll get to, in the case of London, you'll get some of the fans overseas that don't get to see these players too, and it would be a big press thing, and maybe that would beef it up a little bit. And that's about all I got to say about the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, that's about all there is to say about the whole Pro Bowl. I mean, you know, like you said, it is what it is. It's nice when your team has people who can't show up.
Yes, that's the big one, huh? And yeah. Hopefully they're not showing up for other reasons. And what was it, Ezekiel Elliott, for example, saying sorry? What did he say? Sorry, y'all, I didn't mean to get the Rona.
Yeah, so, I didn't mean to get the Rona.
Yeah, that was tongue in cheek. It's like you could see a fun guy like that making a comment, kind of tongue in cheek about it. But you know, he's not the only one Von Miller has, and we're gonna see what's going. Man, these guys might be getting tested like now. Every 3 days, they're saying. So
yeah,
that's gonna be kind of wild. And I guess you know, they talked about logistics with, you know, training camp, and guys would go to a cafeteria or something, catered food, whatnot, and how they're gonna have to do that in like shifts and make sure people are separated. Man, that just sucks. It's so almost inhumane. You know what I mean? It's I don't know. I don't care for all that, but we'll see how this is all going to work. And, you know, moving forward, the other thing that coronavirus related is, as we assumed, but I guess made official not too long ago, it was earlier today, Bert Lawton, head of PR for the Pittsburgh Steelers, announced that there will be no Friday Night Lights in Latrobe. I mean, we guessed that already.
Yeah,
you know, it was maybe a bus ride for them to go over to the high school, but they're not, you know, they still don't know if they could put people in stands. stands anywhere, let alone, you know, having the record number of people they have had over the last few years. They're always breaking the record each of the last 3 years, I want to say. I know every time I go there, I seem like, man, there's more people here. And, you know, and it's a fundraiser for the school system there. And that's what kind of sucks, you know, for those kids and if it supports athletics and education and stuff like that. So, unfortunately, no event there. But in the same release, Bert Lawton had mentioned that they plan on going back for 2021. So it's not like the Steelers are abandoning the Latrobe area whatsoever either.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure they'll be back. It's just the situation we're in. What are you going to do? You know, you can't violate whatever the current edicts of the government are. And at the same time, you know, while I understand that people are tired of it and people feel that for some reason wearing a mask is impinging on their civil rights, I'm not quite sure how I understand it, but I know that they've said it. But look, you know, I'm at least right now, I am of the opinion that were I to get it, I would probably be fine. But at the same time, I don't want to take the chance.
No, I think you'd be okay, buddy. And I understand. I'm in the same. In fact, you know, I don't want to put any more extra information out of there other than my 70-plus-year-old mother. I don't want to say survived this because it seems like statistically – it affects people of older age or have other conditions more or less. But I just wanted to throw out there, you know, my mother, I had to encourage her a little bit. And it was just kind of one of these things like where she felt really sick for a couple of days and then it was kind of over and then had to get the clean bill of health and everything and paper and like a, I don't know, like a document or something that said she was good to go. And I'm like, you know, it was just crazy, though, hearing like, you know, just the quarantine type stuff and everything like that. So we'll see what goes on, like, with the players and everything. We still don't know. We don't know enough about this thing is what it boils down to, Brian, for me to even, yep. I don't even want to talk about it. Like I say, I usually even defer to somebody when I defer to any type of medical stuff that's out there. And they're constantly changing the news every 24 hours. It seems like it's something new. It's almost like when they're like, well, bacon can now kill you. And then the next day it's like, well, bacon is good for you. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to eat bacon and just go about my day. So, but
there you go.
It's just, you know, it's changing the world and it's changing everything. And you and I just had this little side topic too, as far as I wish we could figure out what the heck is going on so we can make some plans to do some things in the fall. It's like, hey, do I go to the opener in the Big Apple to see him play the Giants? Do I make any kind of plans? I mean, I'm trying to even make summer vacation plans right now, and that becomes difficult for everyone. And then, of course, you know, this is what we end up talking about, me and you, rather than, you know, this is June. We should be talking about, hey, camp's right around the corner. Now, we know June is usually really, really slow here in the – not only on the website, on the podcast, the back rooms, everything. Like, usually the back rooms are lively. We have things to talk about. There's people I forgot are even part of our team here because we're just not we're not talking about anything right now. It is just dead as a doornail, nothing going on. But so we will, much like Ed Bouchette, who now writes for The Athletic, you know, we're going to bring this up too. Ed seems to bring this out of the closet, you know, every dusts it off, you know, in storage, wherever he gets it from every year. And it's the Steelers free agents, the five best and worst signings. And usually it's some caveat of whether it's under Kevin Colbert or not. And since The Athletic is a paid thing, I'm looking at Ed's 2019 as to not besmirch their paid model and give any of their information away for free. So that's one disclaimer here. And then also we're looking at a few other writers and websites that are out there that have their own opinions of who is good and bad. And, you know, you and I have our own opinions on who's good and bad. So we're going to. So, Brian, I think we're just going to dive headfirst into this, and knowing the way me and you like to talk, and also just kind of pointing out our lack of subject matter, I think we're going to stick to either the best or the worst. So let's go with the best first for today, I think. And then we can follow up with the worst later on and kind of do a two-parter here, because I think there's going to be enough to be said. I mean, we could just rifle off some names, but aside from just Ed Bouchette's article. We also have some guys that are outside the Kevin Colbert era too that are definitely worth a mention, not just an honorable mention, but definitely worth a mention. So, and there's one here in Ed's article from last year from the Post Gazette when he was still working there. That's kind of interesting for a best of list under Kevin Colbert, if you noticed it. But let's just let the cat out of the bag. I know you want to talk about him. Is Potsy the best free agent in the Kevin Colbert era?
As of right now, yes, absolutely. There's not even a question. Potsy is without a doubt. James Ferrier is what brought that defense together and was absolutely everything the Steelers needed at that inside linebacker position, at that generalship position on the field. I don't think you can understate how valuable James Ferrier was to that team. And yeah, I could talk about Potsy for probably the full hour and not get to anybody else and still not cover all the reasons that he is the absolute best free agent signing of the Kevin Colbert era, maybe in Steelers history. And I say that I did put the caveat on it of right now, because there's a guy that they signed last year that made very big strides last year in order to be even remotely discussed in the James Ferrier level. He's got to do it for many more years. But, you know I'm talking about the glove.
Yeah, the glove. I was almost drawing a blank because I was going to say trade. We could almost put trades in here too, because you throw Minka in as one of those asterisks as well. But also, there's also been bad trades. Some bad trades, some non-existent type trades, and maybe some, you know, different acquisitions of that nature where you just kind of want to go, So I'll never forget when they were struggling for an offensive lineman. Who was the guy? Was it Levi Brown? Was that his name? Came over from the Arizona Cardinals and tore his bicep before he ever played a game. It was like they picked him up, and then he tore it like during pregame warmups that Sunday at Heinz Field. Never got to see the guy, and they needed – I think that was when Mike Adams was – they were trying to work him in as a left tackle. And there's numerous occasions like that, because some people will probably throw guys like – I don't know, like Ryan Switzer under the bus, or who was the safety that came over from Tampa Bay? Not Mark Barron, but the guy they actually traded for. He ended up with a pick in a game, but he didn't really play a whole lot. He ended up with Dallas and a bunch of other guys too. I'm trying to remember who it was now, but it was another one of those like low key things where it's like one works and one doesn't. So trades can be real iffy. I think the reason why you gravitate towards free agents is because free agents usually cost you money. And here you get a guy from the Jets. You pick him up. He's 27 years old when he enters the Steelers team. And I'm sure, you know, if we had all back in 2002, if we all had the social media and, you know, the number of money, there was still Monday morning quarterbacks out there, but I'm sure people complain about the Ferrier deal. I'm willing to bet. What are you going to do with this guy? You're going to move him to inside linebacker? Where's he going to play? You know, back then though, that they had Joey Porter, and who would have been bookending with Joey Porter at this point? We weren't quite in the James Harrison era just yet. James was still trying to make an NFL roster, but it'll come to me here in a second.
Man, I can't remember.
I can't either. I'll look it up. I'll find it in like 2 seconds. But it was, you know, going even back that far, you talk about greatest free agent signings ever. It's really tough because Kevin Green played for a few different teams too. But man, he was dynamite for the 3 seasons or so he was in Pittsburgh.
He was. There's no question about it. But you have to look at the Kevin Green time for what it was, which was a short period of time. Whereas James Ferrier came in, what, in 2002, played 9 years and on some of the best defenses that the Steelers have ever had, and won 2 championships. And was an integral part of that. Kevin Green could have won a championship with the Steelers, except for who we talked about last week. So,
N-014.
Yeah, N-014. that guy. So, you know, but he didn't. And the small time frame he was there, he was great while he was there. But I can't give him the nod over James Ferrier simply because of overall benefit to the team.
Yeah, I agree. There's no ring. Isn't that how we define people? Dan Marino.
That's what it is, right?
You know? Dan Marino, hey, you don't have a Super Bowl ring. Sorry, you're left out of the conversation. By the way, we should both smack ourselves for this. It was Jason Gilden.
I was trying to say. I couldn't remember for sure.
Yeah, you talk about, you know, Ike Taylor talked about it too, and I think I saw somebody talking about underrated Steelers somewhere on social media, and Ike Taylor's name comes up. You think James Ferrier is underrated still? Because even though he's regarded as maybe the best free agent signing by the Steelers, that's not a name you bring. You know, when you're bringing up all the guys that were great with these Super Bowl defenses, what, James Harrison, you bring up Troy, of course, or an Aaron Smith or a Casey Hampton. You know, Ferrier's name kind of gets somewhere left in the middle of the pack there, I think.
Only for people who aren't paying attention.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to put it that way. If you were watching and you were really, a student of those defenses, so to speak, you understood, just as you understood how important Aaron Smith was, you understood how important James Ferrier was.
It's another one of the hardware discussions, because it was two Pro Bowls for James Ferrier. And ironically, 2008 was one of those, you know? So you talk about that Super Bowl defense and the guys that were there. It was, let me see, who all got in? Well, actually, it was those three. It was Ferrier, Harrison, and Polamalu. But you know what? We'll throw the other guy. Let's just go right out there. The other guy that's usually highly regarded in this conversation, too, is Ryan Clark. So another guy that was signed and came over, and he was the perfect complement next to Troy Polamalu. By the way, looking at this defense from 08, still you had the young guys that just came in, the rooks, with like Lamar Woodley and Lawrence Timmons, and then there was still, you know, Larry Foote. So some of these guys, Brett Kiesel, there's quite a few what do you want to say, popular names that show up when you're looking at these lists. But Ryan Clark, he comes to the Steelers about kind of the same thing, you know, plays 4 years. Two different teams, Giants and Redskins, comes into this situation in Pittsburgh, has a pretty hallmark career. Another guy that was a tackling machine, always in that 100-tackle range, just like Ferrier was. You're not going to see a whole lot when it comes to sacks or, you know, picks or things like that. But anyone, like you said, that was paying attention, Ryan Clark hit like a truck, and you saw what happened. It's a very painful memory, Brian, but when Ryan Clark was not there in Denver.
Oh, yeah.
In Denver, 2011, yep. The whole Tim Tebow thing, and Ryan Mundy was his replacement due to the sickle cell disease that Clark had and couldn't play in the Mile High atmosphere there in Denver, and that made all the difference. I still believe in my heart to this day Ryan Clark plays that game. You probably don't even get to overtime. That's probably one of the big things, and that play probably doesn't even happen in overtime.
Not even a question in my mind. During the time Ryan Clark was with the Steelers, the thing that used to curdle my blood is seeing a Denver game in Denver, because you just, yep. I'm like, I can't, no, that's a bad, like, I'd immediately chalk it up as a loss. Didn't even matter how bad Denver was. It's like, that's how integral he was to the Steelers defense working well in those situations. And you're absolutely right. You know, you take a key component out of that group, and it's very difficult, you know, for everything to work as seamlessly, because unfortunately there really was that kind of a drop off. And Ryan Clark was, you know, Polamalu, when you look at that defense, right, Polamalu was scary because of the things he could do, right? The fact that he was surprising, you didn't know where he was going to be at any given time, and he roamed. Ryan Clark was scary because he was going to kill you.
Yes.
All right. You know, just ask, you know, I can't even remember the guy's name, the idiot Patriot who I hate.
Which
I have a picture of the tackle on my wall somewhere. Yeah,
which
all
one?
Of them. You know, I can't even say that short white guy receiver, but because that would be which one of them as well.
Yes.
But you know, he's.
Well, at least for the Patriots. The Patriots, yeah. If you said that for the Steelers, you're like, oh, okay, it's Ryan Switzer. You know, it's all relative to the Patriots.
To that team, yes. Yeah. But Ryan Clark was a heat-seeking missile. He was. And, you know, he put the fear of the hit in guys where they didn't want to come across the middle. They were hearing footsteps. And you could get away with it to a certain extent. I mean, he was right in that. Oh, yeah, that's the guy. Wes Welker, one of my least favorite human beings.
We're just laying it on thick today, man.
what am I going to do? I can't help it. The other one was the Raven running back that he crushed. That sticks out in my head.
Was it McGahee back then, or
McGahee or McGinnis or something like that?
I think it was
that.
Willis.
It's a McGuh.
Yeah, don't worry.
Some big Magoo who had purple on, and Clark just crushed him.
Oh, yeah. That was it. It was a knockout hit. That was the 2008 AFC title game. I knew it was one of the playoff games of that era. Jeez, 2008, man. It's just so long ago. And you can see why we get so entitled and spoiled as Steelers fans. I mean, there's just two guys right here. Now, you already had Troy Polamalu, Ben, and Heath drafted in the first round, just kind of preceding this by not even 5 years, right? You're talking about what? You're talking about 05, 04, 05, 06, I think. And then you sign Clark. You sign James.
03, 04, 05. Because yes. Polamalu was 3, Ben was 4, yes. Heath was 5.
Yeah, you're correct. We're correcting each other today, right? So
yeah,
But anyway, we're just a year off. Not a huge difference when you're leading into 2008. You bring in the two guys, Clark and Ferrier, and then you know, you get the rise of James Harrison. You have two stellar draft picks, first and second round, and Timmons and Woodley. This is just to add to that defense. It's just lights out, man. I mean, it was unbelievable. And we didn't even talk about Casey Hampton or. I can't remember. I think Aaron Smith was still healthy around that same time, too.
Yep.
And then, I don't think he started having problems until around 2010. Yeah, he was a 16-game player at this point up until the following season, actually. It was 2009 was when he started, tapering off. He couldn't play. Tried to get him on the field for those 3 years. It just didn't happen, unfortunately. And, you know, there's a long-forgotten guy when it comes to when you talk about the defense or the fall of the defense or the defense getting too old or people that tried to claim that they couldn't draft. And, you know, they went after like Ziggy Hood. They went after Cam Hayward at that point. And I'm sure a lot of people had a lot of knocks on Cam Hayward. And it was like, hey, this guy never got on give him a chance. He didn't get on the field. Now, I don't think anybody has those same knocks on our favorite grown-ass man. So,
no.
It's just one of those things. It's like you got to give it time, particularly with defensive linemen, which would be a good segue. We've got either one of these directions to go. We've got a defensive end or / nose tackle that we all love. We know the name. And then we also have Ed put another safety on here, a free safety. And I think it's good to go from Clark to his successor. And Ed puts him on the list at number 5. And I don't know. He just says this is because this is their lack of success signing free agents this century. 5 years, $25 million a year to Mike Mitchell, who, you know, had he went from the Raiders. He had like one really great year or so with the Carolina Panthers and then like whatever it was, a prove it deal or whatever. They said he wasn't the playmaker you had hoped, but I'm not going to knock Mike Mitchell here. Because I think Mike Mitchell was in the mold of Ryan Clark. It's just the Steelers' defense wasn't in that same mold because Troy Polamalu started to get hampered with injuries, and then eventually Troy wasn't there. And when Troy wasn't there, I think that's what really – I think Mitchell almost was playing out of position maybe to some degree.
I think it's fair to say that Mitchell was not the playmaker they wanted him to be. But I also think that Mitchell is a guy who I think – is a player out of time to a certain extent.
Yeah.
When you compare him to Ryan Clark, you're absolutely right. He was a guy that wanted to be a big hitter, wanted to be that threat, but the game had changed and you couldn't get away with the same things. He also wasn't quite as impactful as Ryan Clark was. He oftentimes would frustrate fans because he'd go for the big hit and the guy would bounce off of it. When Ryan Clark gave that big hit, the guy was going down. So, you know, there was a difference. I mean, Mike Mitchell will live forever in my heart, and I will love him forever for the rant he did in the locker room about the refs. And so he's my guy. He can stay on the best of list forever simply because of that, even though with what, only three seasons that he played for the Steelers, it's hard for me to count him as a best signing, but he gets to be there.
He fulfilled all four. He had all four of his years of his contract.
Oh, right,
yeah, he was 30. It was kind of the phase out. Let's try something different. But, you know, just let's do some comparison here. His time in Pittsburgh, I'm pulling it up here. I hate these columns sometimes with statistics, but he had, let me see. Well, that's career. I'm trying to find just the Steelers stuff here. 23 passes defensed, 4 forced fumbles, no sacks, which isn't, you know, as crazy as you would think. I'm trying to see interception-wise here. So 4 picks, right? But yep. At the same time, when you compare somebody that Ryan Clark that's really beloved with the Steelers, he had 3 forced fumbles, 44 passes defensed. Okay, he had 12 picks, but he played twice as long in Pittsburgh. True. So some of those numbers line up real favorably for Mike Mitchell. Like you said, a player out of time, specifically so because he was worried about Roger Goodell being in his back pocket trying to steal some fine money. So, you know, and this is a guy that I think a lot of Steelers will remember Mike Mitchell for many years to come as a hard hitter too, because, you know, Bengals fans, Browns fans, all these crybaby AFC North wannabe pretender division, whatever rivals you want to call them, those fans, they did not have a whole lot of nice things to say about Mike Mitchell, said he was a dirty player, particularly a real you scratch your head when you hear it from Bengals fans because of Vontaze Burfict. So, it's like you're going to defend this guy. You know, Paul Gunther, who is the defensive coordinator there, he's going to defend this guy. You're going to defend your guy. We did it with James Harrison, too, by hook or by crook. You know what I mean? For better or worse. So, you know, this is just it's one of those things. With Ed putting him at fifth, and this is the Colbert era, I mean, I don't know who necessarily jumps ahead, and you can't say like some guys like, well, let's just say Vance McDonald, for example. That was a trade. That wasn't a free agent signing. Right. But what kind of big names of the Steelers, over the course of a decade, we always tell people they don't have the money. I mean, Steven Nelson, you had already mentioned he could be there, but this is 1 year so far. But usually they don't have the money, and or some of the guys don't pan out or don't last very long, and they're like a stopgap. Mark Barron was here to ensure whether or not if they got Devin Bush. They got Devin Bush. Mark Barron no longer needed, cap casualty gone. You had other guys that they tried to fill in, like John Bostic. Okay, that didn't work out there. There's countless examples like that. When it comes to a lot of guys that you're going to get as running backs and wide receivers, a lot of those guys were like role players. Those are Darius Hayward Bay, for example. It's a guy that wasn't necessarily leaned on to be a full-time starter, and they had homegrown players that were already in those positions. So it's real easy for a lot of these guys, like a Ryan Clark or even Mike Mitchell, to stand out in a best-of list because there really aren't that many high-profile signings that they have made over whatever period of time. Particularly, this is the Colbert era that Ed was looking at. And, you know, I've looked at a few others, too, because before we get to one of these other guys, let me see. I had one of these other articles pulled up because they had mentioned guys like Eric Pegram. And it's like, okay, he was the leading rusher for a Steelers team that made the Super Bowl. Does that really make him that great? I want to say Eric Pegram, was he even 1,000 yard? Let me see. I can't remember if he even got 1,000 yards that season.
I don't remember.
I'm pulling him up.
When you're done, I'm going to throw in a name that isn't on any of these lists.
Oh, that'll be good.
I think that should be on, that could bump Mike Mitchell off this list and should be considered on the list at this point, I think.
Well, I was right. Eric Pegram only rushed for 813 yards and 5 touchdowns.
There you go.
Doesn't that, you know, he's going to make an honorable mention for a top 10 list. This was off a Bleacher Report, by the way. Mwelde Moore.
Yeah.
Mwelde Moore, not bad.
Not bad.
John
Allen. I liked Mwelde.
Mwelde was a great situational kind of third down back guy. Great.
Yep.
You know, he was kind of utility, but again, not a player that you wanted to have as an every down back. And he came over from the Vikings. I liked him when he played there, too. Let me see. This is going back with some of these. Brent Alexander, Dwayne Washington. That's not bad. Ray Seals, also not a bad one. I'm going to skip over because that's going to be – well, we got two still. We had already mentioned Kevin Green, Ryan Clark, and James Ferrier. So I'm done with that list.
So, yeah.
Who do we want to mention? Do we want to flip a coin? I think we should stick with defense. Just go to Chemo.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of the first signings, right? Or first three.
One of his first signings, and a guy who was, look, Chemo's going to get, Chemo's going down in history as the guy who knocked Carson Palmer out. That's who his identity is. But he was definitely more than that. He was a dependable guy. He was an anchor. And really, you know, was a role player. And that's why when I say that, I need to bring him up, because the guy that I want to add to this list may be as good, at, if not better, than Chemo was.
Okay. Well, I mean, other than the hit on Palmer, which the Bengals fans are still salty over, and of course, the Steelers, we stole their Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. That was their Super Bowl. We took it away. And then they trashed the whole team shortly thereafter and just scrapped it all anyways. But anyhow, who's your guy?
Tyson Alualu.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Tyson Alualu has been much better than anybody hoped he would be, and has filled in, started at times when needed. He's filled in the gaps when needed, when with Stephon Tuitt not being able to stay healthy. How much more impactful have we gotten? When Cam Hayward was hurt, he took that spot. Tyson Alualu, I think right now, could be a better free agent signing than Mike Mitchell ended up.
That's a very fair assessment. And, you know, another guy that doesn't maybe get as much credit as he should. I do think that some of this comes on the heels of this year's free agent class, too, with guys mm-hmm. like Eric Ebron and Derek Watt. We'll see how their stories end up playing out. So, you know, Chemo, obviously one of the good ones. I think the last one here that's on Ed's list is Jeff Hardings. And, yes. You know, I'm gonna read this directly from Ed's words, because I think he hits the nail on the head here. He said, starting in the mid-1960s, the Steelers basically had three centers into the new century: Ray Mansfield, Mike Webster, and Dermoni Dawson. And, of course, Webster and Dawson are in the Hall of Fame. And
Mansfield should be.
And, yeah, and that's unbelievable. I mean, that's almost like – that's a longer streak than the coaching. Almost. So, you know, there's a little continuity here with Pouncey also, but we had it wasn't Harding's straight into Pouncey, was it? Wasn't Ligurski out there a little bit too?
There was
maybe due to injury.
Another guy too.
It'll come to me here in a second too. Boy, we're just drawing blanks today. But Jeff Harding's, though, he come in 2001 to 2006. He moved over from right guard after playing with the Lions. He moved to center with the Steelers, and he made two Pro Bowls. How can you argue any of that? And of course, he was the guy leading the way for the bus ride too.
Yep.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's
Sean Mahan.
Oh,
played
yeah.
a year.
Well, you know what? He may show up on the. That's why he shows up. Yeah. He's going to show up on the next episode. That's why I drew a blank. So yeah, that's one of those ones there. That's just too funny. You know, you look at all this stuff. Jeff Harding's definitely. I mean, you had the transition to Ben starting to play. Jeff Harding's. You know, this was still a team that was run focused. We just talked about mm-hmm. quarterback wise. We mentioned guys like Cordell Stewart, Kent Graham, Tommy Maddox. I mean, these were the guys that Hardings was snapping the ball to, and he was still able to maintain that that level of play. So it's fairly interesting there, just to kind of revisit some of that. I don't know how much revised Ed has on his list. He also has some of the worst on his list too that we'll be covering here in the near future. So I'm trying to bite my tongue by mentioning a few other names. I just thought it was interesting that somebody – I hadn't heard Eric Pegram's name in so long, and he was a guy who, you know, he ran for 1,000 yards once with the Atlanta Falcons back in like 1993, and then he didn't do much of anything else. It's so weird to me. He had five touchdowns with the Steelers, but I understand he wasn't just the primary guy, but saying, you know, he was the leading running back, it's a little disingenuous there. I mean, Bam Morris is the guy you're going to remember. Bam may have had maybe 250 yards less or so, but he had nine touchdowns, and that was the guy you remembered as kind of being the hammer to the nail there and punching it into the end zone.
Yeah, yeah. And that's Bam captured your imagination more, you know, because A, that was the name, Bam. Oh, it's Bam. His name is Bam. And, you know, whether you were having a Fred Flintstone vibe, thinking of Bam Bam, Barney Rubble's kid or whatever, I don't know. But Bam, he was Bam. So you kind of got into that. And he captured the imagination a little bit more than Pegram did. So, you know, look, Eric is a boring name. Sorry, Eric Ebron, but it's a boring name. Bam is a more exciting name than Eric.
Yeah, it's that's still kind of funny. So I'm just trying to troll some of the list here and just trying to find some of the guys that have come and gone, and you know, it's just there isn't much more than that, to be completely honest. And it just goes to show you, we talk about, you know, how you can hit or miss with the draft. I mean, it's kind of the same way there. I don't know, like I mentioned Darius Heyward-Bey a little earlier. I mean, there's a guy that was very much
did, signing.
Yes, and did a lot of thankless jobs with the Steelers, and definitely somebody that you should commit to memory. I tried to think about some of the running backs too. You know, recently
still couldn't catch a cold, but he was very good at what he did.
Yeah, there's Levi Brown. Actually, I'm just seeing it just in the list now, which is kind of funny. You could always mention Ross Ventrone on this too, because he was probably signed and released so many times between the Patriots too. And people always used to confuse him for Troy Polamalu, which was always kind of funny. And, you know, I'm going through. I cannot find any other names. I have plenty of them that will go on the naughty list, so to speak. But for the most part, you know, we're not going to talk a whole lot about kickers or punters or anything of that nature. I know they're people too. We talk about them being people too. But it's just one of those things where, you know, how do you compare them to some of the names that we just talked about, really? You know what I mean? It's
I will say this. I will say that the season prior to going south, the season prior to his confidence losing season, where Jeff Boswell or Chris Jeff. Boswell, I can't, Jeff, who the frick is Jeff Boswell?
Jeff Reed.
Jeff Reed. I'm combining the two guys. All right. Chris Boswell makes the Pro Bowl, hits like 9 billion game-winning field goals. Like, it's hard to categorize any kicker signing as a top free agent signing, because all kicker signings are free agent signings, and they generally don't last that long. Very rarely do you draft a kicker. But Boswell was a good signing for them. And you could conceivably make the argument that, you know, in the position they were in at the time, where they lost a guy who was a good, solid kicker in Sean Sweezum, went through the next minor league version of He Who Shall Not Be Named with the Scooby-Doo, and, you know, and then end up with Boswell, who in many ways saved their season at some point that one year because of all those game-winning kicks. You just you kind of go, all right, that turned out pretty darn good. So I can see that as an honorable mention.
Yeah, I mean, it's just – it's tough when you go through the list and you see guys like a Steven Johnson or there's a lot of guys I can't name yet. I just don't want to do the spoilers, so I think we're going to end up putting a bow on it. But, oh, here's one more. One more. I do have one more. He should be included on this list. D'Angelo Williams.
Yeah, I would give you that. I think so too. D'Angelo Williams, even though very, very, very short term, he became very popular very quickly, was very well embraced by the fans, played tremendously that first season when he was asked to. So, yeah, I'd say that was a good pickup for them. Sure.
Yeah, and then you see, you know, back in 2017 when you had somebody like Tyson Alualu added to the roster, you had Nile Davis, Justin Hunter, and Cody Sensabaugh. It's the kind of free agents that the Steelers usually end up netting because they're trying to keep everyone else, you know, in-house, you know, anybody that they've drafted and groomed themselves. So it becomes fairly interesting when you look back on some of this. And absolutely, D'Angelo Williams was – very much loved. He very much became a Pittsburgh guy for his, you know, short tenure that he was here, and he put up some great numbers in the absence of Le'Veon Bell. And we definitely have some other running backs that are going to show up on this same list as well. So it's going to be, you know, it's kind of interesting going back, looking at some of these names. And I'm sure there might be a few commenters out there. They're going to find somebody, I bet, that we left off of here, and not by, you know, any... We didn't do it intentionally. We'll put it that way.
No.
This was all sparked by Ed's deal, and Ed kind of picked all the good ones right off there. But, you know, D'Angelo Williams, he's a guy. There's somebody you know, you talk about Mike Mitchell being here for 4 years. D'Angelo, what, 3 years? And
two or three, yeah.
And he caught the ball. He wasn't known as a pass-catching back. And that was just kind of interesting to me, the numbers that he ended up putting up. 2 years in Pittsburgh, okay. So he almost had a 1,000-yard season. He had 907 yards with 10 starts only and 11 touchdowns, his second most with his career back in 2015. He had caught 40 passes for 367 yards. He ended up with multiple touchdown games, too. If I remember, he had 3 in one game for the one. He didn't have as much use in 2016. And, you know, we're talking about a guy who was now 33 years of age as well. So to be able to still go out there and do what he did, 343 yards, 4 touchdowns. He only started the 4 games, and he still caught 18 passes, 118 yards, and 2 touchdowns there. So, I mean, 6 touchdowns, that's a pretty good pickup there too. But, you know, again, you talk about guys like Jericho Cotri and Lance Moore. And it's like one did well for like really one season. Everybody's like, how are you going to replace him? And then he moved on. He had 10 touchdowns, but it's like, it's such a short cup of coffee, and it wasn't a big high profile signing. So obviously Lance Moore, he was always hurt. And then he, you know, asked for his release, and we'll have some talk about guys like him, Morgan Burnett and others on the next show.
Unfortunately, the flip side to this list is actually much more competitive than this side of the list. And again, it's when you're dealing in second tier level free agents for most of the time, which is what the Steelers are doing, because they don't believe in building their team through free agency, and they believe in building it through the draft and keeping the guys they have. And so they are never going to have the money to splurge on the top level guys. And as a result of that, you know, you are more likely to miss than you are to hit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're almost kind of like going for a veteran player who has some experience, maybe some snaps as a starter, or at least has been in somebody's system or a camp or something that is similar to the type of role you foresee them playing or filling with your team. Unfortunately, in most cases, these guys are going to be a little bit older. They may even cost a little more than the guy in the case of Mark Barron, than the guy that you're going to end up drafting and looking for as part of your future, like a Devin Bush. So it's one of those things that happen. By the way, Mark Barron will not be on my worst list. I don't think he'll be on yours either, because when we get to that, there are some names that really hit it out of the park.
Oh, yeah. Look, there's a recent guy who will be on there. No question about it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it won't be Mark Barron.
Well, Brian, hey, we're going to put a bow on this. Thanks for joining me once again today, my friend.
Absolutely. I'm always happy to spend some time with my brother from another mother. And I am happy to say that in this episode, I did not say absolutely once, but you did.
I absolutely will say absolutely as many times as I want to absolutely say it. It's just one of those things that I must do. So... I feel the need. Hey, you know, well, it's not the Kevin Colbert era, but you know, it's so tough when guys only like show up in camp, for example, or they were in somebody's camp, particularly kickers, because they really are like nomads until they catch on with one team. So even like a Gary Anderson, who's well known, you know, from the 80s Steelers teams, he was in camp for the Bills first. But one other guy that, you know, you could put in this list, and he ended up signing the highest contract ever known among wide receivers, not with the Steelers, but after he had left Pittsburgh following the 97 season. And that's Yancey Thigpen. So yeah. there's someone there that's kind of interesting. He had 1 year with the San Diego Chargers, and for whatever reason, you know, just didn't stick or didn't catch on there with that team. So you know, we could always find some examples like that, but I think this was more encompassing. So don't forget to like and comment and subscribe. We can't wait to hear or see your comments. And we're getting around to responding to some of them, even if they're a little on delay, and filtering out a little bit of the hate mail still from Mike's show a week ago. So poor Mike, he's getting dogpiled on. But yep, Brian, thanks for joining me once again. His name's Brian. My name's Joe. And until next time, I encourage everyone out there to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.